Welcome to Dental Brain Crops. I am your host, Chelsea Myers, and today I'm joined with Peter McClellan. Dr. McClellan practices in Kansas City and is the CEO of Dynamic Dental Services Group, and he also is very passionate about helping others, which is how he and I connected first. Dr. McClellan, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Chelsea. Thank you for having me. It's a real pleasure to make this happen.
I'm so excited to have you. So if you would just kind of talk about your background, first of all, so we can get to know you a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. So I am a twin. My twin is actually a dentist. I grew up in the Midwest, got to spend some time in Hawaii, and so I have a big piece of my heart that lives there. I graduated from dental school in Kansas City and learned about being an entrepreneur. Had never really heard of the word until probably, you know, after college. And the pathway that I've kind of followed lends to being a team leader. And so I get to practice dentistry in Kansas City. And then I co-own 10 practices here across the metro area.
So cool. Yeah, I remember when I first heard about the word entrepreneur, my uncle had said it. And at that time, I was trying to figure out which path, you know, we have these like four or five paths that we think are the only ones that exist, right, when we're growing up. And he said this word, and it was so ambiguous. And I'm like, that one, that sounds exciting because it sounds like I can be whatever I want to be. So you've got dentistry and entrepreneurship. Talk to me more about that.
Yeah, certainly. I had moved to Hawaii through the military and was a dentist in the Army. And I would see my neighbor never go to a job, and I didn't do that. So, guys, and I learned you can own a company. I thought that was amazing. You can own a company and you didn't have to go to a job. And being someone that always thought, oh, I'll become a dentist, that his story and then his friend's stories just really opened up my eyes to this idea that you could own a company and create value for people, but you didn't have to be physically present. And so I think once I saw that, I couldn't unsee it. And that has been a bit of an obsession for me. And it's a long road. It doesn't happen overnight to be able to build, particularly as a dentist, because your skill set lends itself to needing to be present in order to produce the income to support the business. So the challenge of replacing yourself or helping to put that energy into other people so that the practice can grow has been really the majority of the work that I've been doing for the last few years. So we started these practices. We started with two in 2017 and grew to 10 since then. So it didn't happen overnight. It certainly wasn't easy. And I remember reading Cash Flow Quadrant that Robert Kiyosaki wrote. And he gives the example of a dentist as being like the ultimate self-employed person. And I thought, wow, that is just not what I wanted to be. I didn't want to be self-employed. And so once I found that out, everything I did from that point forward was in an attempt to understand, how do you create an organization that can run without you? How can you empower and articulate what you want things to look like without micromanaging? And that gas and brake in which gear to shift into and even which gear to show up in at work has been a challenge. And I think it's really important to talk through that and to talk to that as we've grown and as we continue, most importantly, to sustain.
So. Right. Because what you're talking about is, you know, at the beginning, you've got you and you've got to be an employee of the business, right? And then you've got you with this other hat and you've got to be the boss of the business. And so when you're wearing both and trying to figure out, okay, what do I expect of me as the CEO when I'm in that role as the employee? Because it's got to be transferable, right? Once you step away from that. And then when I'm the employee, what do I expect of me as the CEO being my boss? It's really a dynamic role that you took on. So talk to me about those early stages, because you talked about the importance of making sure certain things were in place so that you could scale it.
Yeah, so when we were at, during the pandemic, it gave me time to pause and think about what I wanted life to look like. And I think that kind of challenging moment for everyone, if you took the time to reflect on what you were doing prior to then and where you wanted to go, It bore some beautiful fruit and beautiful ideas. And so the time that I had to spend not going to clinic, I realized, okay, if I can bring on an associate doctor in one of my practices, I can give myself some freedom and time to work on the business. And we decided to open two practices. We were at three. We decided to open two practices during the pandemic. And at that point, it was such a challenge to put a roadmap and to remind people of what we were trying to achieve. And that is when, very serendipitously, I came across the book Vivid Vision by Cameron Harold. And that, along with the book Traction by Gina Wickman, allowed me, it gave me almost the two keys that I needed to unlock, which was the door of starting to put down on paper what we wanted the organization to look like. And I've always been one of those people who could see from point A to point Z, if you will. But the challenge was to bring other people along with us and remind them of each step along the way. And so self-implementing Traction, or implementing the EOS in our businesses, was what helped us to organize things in a way that could be measurable so that we knew what our inputs were and our outputs were. And right now, the way we do it is I try my best to book in my week with a day of planning, a day of managing kind of that CEO hat, and the end of the week too. And I'm very lucky that I have business partners that have different strengths, and we try really hard to divide and conquer. But I found once we had that vivid vision, it was so much easier to remind people of the why of what we were doing and make better decisions. Whether we needed to hire another hygienist, or whether we needed to downsize, what practice do we need to be looking at versus do we need to do a startup in this area? And so that was a big inflection point that was super painful and really almost burned me out. But once I found those two tools and leaned into them, it gave us a lot of confidence, and it gave us a lot of stability, I felt like. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And talk to me about scaling the culture, because I know one of the things I love about you guys is it's not just about warm bodies in the chairs. It's you want people that want to be a part of your organization with that shared vision. So when you're leading geographically dispersed teams, how do you do that effectively?
Yeah. So one of the things that we found is with that vivid vision, we consistently give a message to the team member that we're trying to onboard of why we're here. We're here for patients. We're here for allowing patients to have one of the most a better experience than they've had before, and then one that is also going to be replicable for them. So they're going to know that they're going to have the same experience each time that they come in. So when we onboard someone, we try to explain to them that there will be more than likely an opportunity for you to make more money somewhere else at some point along the career. And the goal would be that you find the things that you're good at, your zone of genius, if you will, and we try to lean into that. So what's been the most fun about growing the organization is finding people who we could see that there was a light in them that maybe they could do something else, like post on social media. Or we have a hygienist who's such a good teacher one-on-one. And so giving her the space and the floor to teach some of our other hygienists has been really cool. It is, I would say it's the most consistent challenge that we're having now. And I think everyone can relate who owns a business, is the idea that when people are coming to you and they're asking for all of these things, in dentistry, like, we don't have as much flexibility to allow people to work from home. And that's what people want. And so how do we get dynamic? How do we get creative about, when you have a really good person who is becoming a mom of two and they want to spend time at home, how do you hold on to that person? How do you create a system in which they can plug in and provide value, but still have the balance of having home time. And so we're facing those challenges now. And I think it's important to talk as dentists. There are key team members that have to be there. You know, I've never been able to do dental assisting from my living room. If I could, I would for sure. But you know, our industry is so unique because all the revenue that we have happens within the doors and the hours that we're open, you know, 4 to 5 days a week. Sometimes it's not like, you know, these online businesses that are open 365 days a year. And so from a cultural standpoint, helping to stay stable and steady with that expectation, that's been really important for us, because it's, if you don't show up for work and if you don't show up ready and willing to help patients, then the whole team gets kind of dragged down. And I think our consistent message, staying consistent with that message, is important. And it does sometimes come at a, you know, you have to be willing, if a team member is not able to show up, you have to be willing to say, maybe this is not the right fit. And sometimes that does shrink your ability to produce dentistry or to provide dentistry. But ultimately, as you've found with probably everything and everyone that you've talked to, it only takes one or two bad seeds to really ruin the level of productivity of the culture, and translates to unhappy team members. And I think the patients ultimately lose too. So that's what we've learned. And you know, if you want to grow and you want to onboard people, that's the big focus that we have now, is our onboarding process. So.
Yeah. And of course the culture is just, you know, where I become really passionate, because when I'm talking to someone who is leaving or has left a place of employment, it's not generally because they were offered more money or it was closer to home. More often than not, what I'm finding is it's their perception of their experience at work. I think it was back in 2012, and Google did Project Aristotle, where they studied 180 of their own teams that they had access to lots of information from, including how effective they were, but their age and their background, their skill sets, their personality types. And what they found was that there was no mix of personality type or skill sets that actually led to the most effective teams. In fact, they found that there was, they called it the who part of the equation didn't even seem to matter. What did matter is what Amy Edmondson, a professor at Harvard Business School, has done a lot of research on psychological safety. And our most effective teams are those that feel safe in their environments. They take risks. They are feeling encouraged to try new things and share their ideas and explore and fail and grow. And by and large, we're seeing that when teams feel like they have that at work, that it's reaching them at a different level and it's just checking a box or paying a bill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In a big, you know, you had kind of reached out. We talked a little bit about the idea of the 75 hard program that I did. And that phase in my career was one in which anybody that's an entrepreneur that's trying to grow a business, sometimes you put yourself last. And the craziest thing is you think that you don't have time for yourself. You are giving. And I found that 4.5, 5 years in, that I was resenting some people that I was working with because I wasn't taking the time for myself. And then as a leader, if you're going to create culture of trust and a feel of I've got your back, then you have to show up every day the best version of yourself. And that has been such a light bulb for me. It is a challenge every single day, but the ability to wake up, get a workout in, get some positive flow of emotion from positive motion has really, it allows me to understand that the things that you do daily, the habits that we have daily, really do have these tertiary effects of profit, not only for your, like your human feeling, but profit in your business, because you're able to show up and you're not resenting other people thinking that maybe they're, you know, they're taking time away from you, you show up with empathy and compassion because you already got that like aggression out or that energy out, and you show up in the best version of yourself. And for months and years, I wasn't that person, and I've learned from it. And it's important to talk about because you can easily avoid that with scheduled time to journal or scheduled time to get a walk in with a friend or a trainer to come. And I think a lot of business leaders fail to invest that amount of time or money into things, even if it's with like a professional coach. And that's one of the biggest mistakes that you can make, is failing to invest in yourself, not only time, but also money. And I'm a product of that. And I believe firmly that it is the thing that everybody must do at a certain stage to get to the next level.
100%. You know, I think there's this misbelief that once you reach a certain milestone or make a certain amount of money or reach a certain age or your kids are a certain age, that then you'll have the time to invest in yourself. And we become really unhappy, unhealthy adults that people don't want to be led by. And, you know, James Clear wrote the book Atomic Habits. And one of the concepts I like that he talks about is habit stacking. So for anybody listening who maybe doesn't have a regular pattern of whether it's daily stretching, meditation, whatever your thing is that you kind of know in the back of your mind would be useful to you, if you could just attach it to something you're already doing. So if you get up and you're brushing your teeth by 6:15, get up at 6 and just give yourself that 15 minutes because you're already going to do something for sure at 6:15. So we're just going to back it up a little bit or do it after, whichever works for you. But when we can find ways to give our mind, body, and soul what it needs, we are so much more prepared, and the clarity that comes is just incredible. But we are so much more prepared to be whatever we need to be from what we can see on our schedule that is there, and then all the things that we have no idea are coming our way that day.
Yeah, oh, very much so. I feel super blessed because I started this pathway with a business partner and always looked at things through the lens of, because I am a twin, always looked at things through the lens of, I'd like to have somebody with me. I need somebody to help see around blind spots that I don't see. And that level of competition that you find intuitively between yourselves in, you know, being a productive dentist or working hard, it really helped to fuel consistent growth. Because when I was feeling down and low, my business partner, Dan, would be, let's go do this. Let's rearrange the floor here. And my other business partner, Jeff, has really found kind of a balance between us. And I think a lot of times in dentistry, when you want to, at least in the dental business, people hear about partnerships that go wrong and they get down on them. But I found it to be one of those things, as long as you don't hold your business partners in contempt for not doing the things that you want them to do and celebrate the differences and then do the things that you need to do for yourself, you can get further down the line. And it's nice to be able to share your frustrations. I can't imagine doing this all by myself. It would be, you know, lonely car rides to work without being able to talk through stuff. That's super key, you know, because you're not going to, no amount of, like, your spouse does not want to hear about, you know, so-and-so and the way they presented the treatment plan. Like, that's just, that's not what they signed up for. And I think that's why it's kind of cool when you have business partners who can get it and talk through it. And then, you know, we're still learning to draw the line at not having business talk around our partners, but it's, that's a real thing too, right? You have decision fatigue. You're making all these decisions at work. And when you come home, you want to just stare at a white wall. So how do you figure out a way to come home and show up the best version of yourself and also be a giver? That's a challenge, huge challenge. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think in dentistry, that's, people become so isolated and they sedate themselves because they're, you know, you're empathetically trying to give to patients who are kind of scared, and then you want to give to your team, and then you have a hard time showing up. And so what do you have to do for yourself to be able to be that best version? Is it's a cool challenge to have if you can look at it that way, but it's I don't think the challenge goes away. I don't think you ever figure it out.
Right. And that's like an entrepreneur thing, right? We look at the words obstacle and challenge and we're like, yes, this is going to be exciting. Where most people are like, no, no more. Like, what is the answer? Just give me the answer. So owning a little bit of that craziness, I know that's somewhat unique to our personality type, but I do think that there's, back to what we were saying, just kind of implementing even just a small dose. Here's the reason. I feel like if we can implement a small dose of something like the 15 minutes before you brush your teeth, like I mentioned, or maybe at the end of your workday, you just build in 15 minutes of decompression time, whatever that looks like for you before you switch gears to walk in the door with your family. It's a good test. 10 to 15 minutes will tell you, was this useful? Do I need more of it? Could I do with a little less of it? Or do I need to figure out a whole nother solution altogether? But what you're bringing up is so important, Pete, because you're saying, notice what's going on with you so that you can not only just be the best for other people, but so that you can feel good. Because that ultimately is the goal, right? I promise you, I've coached hundreds of people now at this point in my career. There's no amount of money. There's no, you know, house on the island. There's no, level of, you know, family success. There's nothing that's going to externally that's going to make up for an internal discomfort or an internal torment. And so we've got to figure out when those things are starting so that we can figure out what we need to do. And what you're saying is it may be just as simple as having a system in place for switching gears when you're switching roles from, you know, professional at work to family at home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so key. And you have the luxury of being able to obviously be super interested in it and study people at different phases. And it's funny how you can read so many books and people say the same thing. And we are so stubborn in that we say, well, when I get here, it's going to be so much better. Yeah. And I think all we can ever do is just reflect and speak to the truth of, yeah, once you get there, it is all about an internal improvement. It is all about the work that you do inside to understand how did you even come up with that number and that story that you needed to achieve this thing before you decided that you weren't going to be an asshole? Like, what?
You know? Exactly. Like,
where did that come from? I've been super blessed to get to, you know, I've had like a performance coach, and I've been able to have people in my life that ask me good questions. And that is such a powerful place to be in life, where you expose yourself to people who are believable, that can ask you good questions. And those questions sometimes can be the difference between you changing your routine and not. And that I found that to be true when my coach asked me, what would the superhero version of yourself do? And that's all it took. That's all it took. Well, they would wake up in the morning and they would work out and they would show up and they would be high energy and they would be singing when they were at work. And that's all it took. So there's power in that, and sharing that is important.
Yeah, 100%. Not like, what would you, when you feel like this, do? That person is the least qualified to make decisions for your life, right? It's like, what would you, feeling your best, what would that person do? How would that person? I had a coach once ask me, he said, okay, so you have this problem you don't know how to figure out. I want to put that on the table for a minute. What do you have on your plate that you do know how to figure out? Go do that thing. Because his point was, we're not going to get stuck in procrastination. We're not going to swim in this feeling of whatever this thing is over here that you're confused about. We're going to do the things we know how to do. And somehow the rest piggybacks. It's that discipline that your brain just goes into problem solving mode. And somehow it all comes together. Like you were saying, your physical fitness plan somehow impacts the success of your business. Yeah. And I'm not professing to know exactly how all the ethers in the universe work, but I do know that having those patterns of discipline and doing everything that you can do to show up for yourself and others, it makes an impact in a big way.
Yeah, very much so. And it's, you know, I think that I had learned those stories even in dental school. I remember not working out or not, I had stopped running maybe the first semester. And then I think I started running the second semester of school, and then everything got clearer and more fun. And it's funny how you forget those lessons. But if you can identify yourself as someone that stays fit or takes care of their body, then that identity that you have allows everything to be more rich. And it also, you're not struggling to fight with who you are when you're showing up, because it's the task that you're doing every single day. You become the person that you want to become because of that 15 minutes of quiet time, because of when you decided to go for a walk in the evening after dinner, or because you got up early and lifted weights or did yoga. And that, it's profound how 15, 20, sometimes 45 minutes can be the difference between day to day being happy and day to day not.
I love it. Hey, so we were talking earlier before the show, and I wanted to make sure that I asked you, do you have a specific example of something that happened as you've grown your businesses that was really challenging that has translated to some really important lessons or understandings for you?
Yeah. So when we were going from three locations to five, and we were onboarding so many new team members, I found it really difficult to articulate to everybody that we were bringing on board what it was that we wanted patients to feel when they came in the door. And then it was also equally difficult to make decisions about how to hire and who to hire, because we didn't have as accurate real-time numbers. And so there was a pretty big place of burnout in frustration of saying things 5, 6, 7 times and it just not clicking. And that's when I came across the Vivid Vision book by Cameron Harold. That allowed me to put what was in my head on paper and then go back to it time and time again and pull from, what did we want our company to look like? What did we want our team members to feel? What did we want our patients to hear and see and feel consistently? So that was a big piece. And I was able to dovetail around and find the system that is EOS that Gina Wickman writes about in Traction. And that was the piece that unlocked all of what we needed to do for implementation of tracking our numbers, understanding our labor productivity, understanding the idea that this 4-chair dental practice is successful when, and kind of putting those milestones in place, and then pulling in our managers at each location to be able to look at those numbers and understand that the numbers on the scorecard told us a story about what was happening with our team. And that was so, I mean, we were very close to entertaining the idea of, you know, selling out, because it was so stressful to keep repeating myself all the time. And it was once we leaned into those already successful operating systems and just putting down what was in my head on paper, that allowed us the comfort. And quite frankly, it was just so key that we could have something foundationally to fall back on consistently, instead of, you know, just, you know, jumping out of the airplane and building the parachute on the way down. Mm-hmm. And then also it made us realize who we needed to bring on board that were different than us. And as we, you know, as you read Traction and that you learn about the visionary and the integrator and all of the key roles that are successful, or that you need to have to be successful. Those moments of, you know, the office manager quitting and then the hygienist quitting, and then, oh my gosh, how many times are people going to quit? And when we're asking them to, you know, do a digital scan with the iTero, and they're not understanding the why of why we're doing it. you know, there's an assumption that you're digitally scanning someone's mouth to sell them Invisalign. And we're not, that's not what it's about. It's about using technology to help people understand their own problems in their mouth. And nobody understands x-rays. It's easier to show them on a screen. And so I think once we were able to look at the Vivid Vision and say, look, guys, this is what we want our patients to feel. And then they understood the why of what we were doing in that clinical appointment. But it wasn't until we presented them with that and then consistently went through their reviews of 30, 60, and 90 days that they could get it. And it's still a struggle. I mean, it's even just last week, I had to have a critical conversation with someone around that. And so that piece, I think going from three practices to five and adding the locations that we weren't physically present at, it took needing to write down the vision and track numbers. Otherwise, there's no way we would have survived. We would have thrown in the towel, because dentists are really good at outproducing our problems. And when you're not at the practice, you can't outproduce the problem. So,
right.
Yeah.
Right. So underneath what I'm hearing you say also is the high importance of knowing what your vision is. And I don't think it's as simple as graduating from school and now you have a license to practice. There's got to be more than that for you to articulate it and embody it and influence others as they're growing in your practice. So I think that's huge. That's a big piece of the work that I do with people as well, is figuring out why are you doing what you're doing? And it's not just for a paycheck, because we can make a paycheck in a lot of ways, right?
Yeah, very much so. And it was crazy to hear. In fact, when we hired our first associate and we heard some of the things that she was being asked to do, as some of the dental offices were trying to decide what to do with the pandemic, and that was fuel for me to say, guys, no, I think there's a better way. I think that there's a happy medium between, you know, trying to do two root canals and three prophys in the same hour. I think you can, if you focus on your communication skills and your ability to deliver comprehensive care, you can have a very predictable career as a dentist. And so that fueled our why too, giving people a different option of what they thought they had.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I have another question for you. You mentioned having a critical conversation recently. And the question is that a strength that you've always had or something that you've developed? Because it's unquestionably important when you're growing a business.
No, not really. I've had to learn it. In doing a lot of self-work with coaches and therapists, I've understand that I have some pretty codependent tendencies. And so working on myself to understand that giving feedback is kind, and explaining to people expectations is being kind. And so as I've grown, I realize a lot of dentists struggle with giving, having those critical conversations, because we want everybody to like us. We have to treat patients that are scared of us. So we want to be this like happy, jovial person that never has conflict. So it's something that I work on every day. But I think what makes it easier is the agreements that we make at the beginning of any kind of business transaction, in terms of this is what success looks like. This is how you can achieve success. So as we sustain the group that we have, leaning more into giving human emotion through videos and documents that share, this is really why we're bringing you on the team. And so having that to foundationally go back to and say, hey, we made this agreement that, we were going to show up in black scrubs and we were going to be at the morning huddle at 7:45. Then it's not really about me. It's about like how you chose to show up. And so that's made it easier once we had something to foundationally stand on. So I see so many practices that we purchase. We go into onboard the team and we hand them like a handbook about policies and procedures, and you're just like, whoa, no one's ever given this to us before. And so I think for dentists, if you're looking to grow and learn how to have critical conversations, first you have to have some level of foundational stability to stand on. And if it's not going to be you, you at least have to give that to your manager leader so that they have something to stand on and not make it about the person as much as the policy. So that's what I found. It's less inflammatory if we have policies that we agree on instead of, you know, a personal attack and maybe the way somebody showed up. That's made it easier for me, but it's not been an easy thing.
No, that's a valid point, making it a lot more about math than the drama or the opinion of the situation. I like what you're saying with that, but and then that could help you organize your thoughts going into that conversation. But to bring it back to what you originally said, I think you're right. I think that we think it's avoiding conflict or avoiding misunderstandings or hurt feelings if we don't say the thing. But if I'm on the receiving end, I actually think I'd want to know every time if somebody has valuable feedback so that I can grow or not misstep or do something in a way that's more comfortable. I would want the feedback. And so I think it's just hard to shift that sometimes in our mind and recognize that if we were the one in need of feedback, we would want it.
Yeah, I shared this quote in my Vivid Vision, and there's not a week that goes by that I don't say it, but Fred Rogers says, if it's mentionable, it's manageable. It's kind of a really nice little quote that's easy to start critical conversations with. And I think when I came across that quote and watched his kind of movie, it was super inspiring, and it's so true.
Yeah, there's definitely an ease and a comfort when you say that. I'm going to have to go watch that. Sounds great.
it's such a good movie. He's such an inspirational person. So,
yeah, I'll watch that. Well, hey, is there anything else that I haven't asked you that you want to add to our conversation today?
You know, the thing that was inspiring to hear from you when we talked offline was your passion to help not only people that are in my situation, right, that are growing, that are trying to be better, but helping dental students to understand that dentistry as a profession can provide a lot of opportunities. And if you lean into things outside the clinical spectrum of your skills, there's a wonderful world out there. And your ability to encourage others to become business owners is a passion that I also share. And I think that that's something that, you know, as I get to spend more time away from the chair, that would be something that I want to lean into more, is giving people some confidence, helping them maybe avoid gaining 30 and 40 pounds and not taking care of themselves as they become a practice owner, learning how to schedule their year so that the important things show up first. That's a huge one. So I share that passion that you do, and I think it's very cool. And I want to lean into that in the next phase of my career. So,
oh, thank you. I'm excited. Well, we'll keep the conversation going for sure.
Yeah. Thanks.
All right. Well, have a good day, Pete. And thanks for coming on today.
Yeah. Thank you, Chelsea. Have a good one. Bye.
I appreciate you joining me for today's episode. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the show, and visit dentallife.coach for access to additional coaching tools, as well as more episodes to help you create the dental life you truly desire.